Hey, listeners, welcome to a special episode of the Wednesday Conversation. Hey, it's summertime around here, and that means people go on vacation. Our recording schedule gets a little wonky, and so occasionally we use this as an opportunity to bring you brand new content, different kinds of content from what you usually experience on the Wednesday Conversation. So what I want to do this week is republish a podcast interview I did 5 years ago with Dr. Owen Strand, back when Owen Strand was running the Center for Public Theology at Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. The interview you're about to hear is from the summer of 2020, and what Owen Strand was interviewing me about was the story of Trinity Classical Academy, a classical school here in Omaha that I helped to start in the summer and fall of 2015. The school's first class actually came to shape in the fall of 2016, so we started the work in 2015, but the first students began in August of 2016. And last month, those students graduated as the first graduating class of Trinity Classical Academy, the first people to make it all the way through 12th grade. So TCA is now a fully functioning pre-K through 12 classical Christian collaborative school here in Omaha, Nebraska. And it's a great success story. It's a story of God's grace and kindness. It's a story of a bunch of people throwing in and pitching in along the way with all kinds of gifts and talents to help an institution come to life and flourish. And as a way of marking that moment in our city and that moment in my own life as a leader and that moment in an institution that I helped to found, I wanted to republish this podcast interview. This podcast is now defunct, and so I don't want this interview to get memory holed. I don't want it to just exist nowhere. I thought it was a meaningful interview. It was a fun opportunity to tell the story of TCA. And there are many, many people around the country and around the world looking to start schools. I get inquiries all the time of people reaching out saying, hey, could you help me? Could you coach me? Could you talk me through how you got the school started? We're looking to do something similar in Boston or in Milwaukee or in Florida or even in Kenya, where I received an email from just a few weeks ago from someone starting a classical school there. So for that purpose, we wanted to republish this interview. So you will hear on this podcast, Dr. Owen Strand, who's the interviewer, and then me, who's telling the story of TCA. I hope you find it encouraging, refreshing. I hope it gives you a moment to celebrate the grace of God in helping some new institutions get started. And whatever your personal convictions are about education and about institution building and those kinds of things, I hope this spurs you to ask what you could be doing to help further the cause of the kingdom of Christ, specifically when it comes to strengthening institutions, churches, schools, nonprofits, and the like. So here, without further ado, is a lightly edited version of my interview with Dr. Owen Strand.
Welcome to City of God. Today on the podcast, we have Bob Thune. He is the founding and lead pastor of Coram Deo Church in Omaha, Nebraska. He's a council member of the Gospel Coalition. He's the author of numerous books, Gospel Eldership, The Gospel-Centered Life, The Gospel-Centered Community. Perhaps most importantly, in earthly terms, he is married to his wife, Lee, and they have four children. And man, Bob, it is so great to have you in the studio today.
Thank you for the invitation. It's great to be here.
Bob drove down from Omaha at my invitation. And this is a joy. So thanks for making it happen, man. And we do know barbecue is somewhere in the mix as well.
I was going to say, you bribed me a little bit and it's worth it. So I'll take it.
We have our ways.
Kansas City barbecue.
We have our ways. Kansas City barbecue. Yeah. I mean, we have the New York Post number one ranked barbecue place, Joe's KC. It used to be Oklahoma Joe's. Now it's Joe's KC. So that's pretty significant.
I'm excited about possibly trying that out.
Is there good barbecue in Omaha?
No, there's not. Yeah. Just flat out no.
That was very definitive.
I'm sorry, but I apologize. I mean, I wish there was, but there's not.
You don't have to apologize to me.
But I apologize to my fellow residents of Omaha. We feel the pain.
You do have a lot of good baseball culture.
We have a lot of good things, just not barbecue.
Yeah. Good zoo, I hear.
Yes, excellent zoo.
Bob is a multifaceted dude, as a lot of you will know. He's a lead pastor of the church I mentioned. But he also has started a school, a classical Christian school, as I understand it. We'll get more from him there, called Trinity Classical Academy. So, Bob, As we were talking about just a minute ago, there's a lot of things we could talk about here. Gospel centrality, being a pastor theologian, which I perceive you to be, at least from my chair, your current phase of ministry. I'm glad to talk about any of these things, but I have to say, seeing you from afar and knowing you from some friends, mutual friend Jeff Dodge and others, I've been impressed by how it seems like you have been able to bring Trinity Classical Academy into existence from nothing, right?
From nothing. Yeah.
Okay. Can you give us the basics of that story?
I will do my best. And it's a fun story to tell. And it's certainly not something I've done alone. I've had a team of people that have been really instrumental in making it happen. So you spend a lot of time helping people think about things like family, masculinity, femininity. And a lot of the people who talk about specifically sort of how the soul of a man is shaped will say that a man in his 20s is trying to figure out mainly questions of identity. Who am I? A man in his 30s is trying to sort of figure out competence and proficiency. Where should I really give my best energy? What am I made to do in the world? And I heard someone say that, you know, when you're 40, you should have a little bit of a sense of who you are and kind of what you're good at. And then you're hopefully poised to really make a good impact in those areas over the course of the next few decades. I don't know if that's, you know, true for everyone or not, but that's sort of the path that my journey has taken. And so when I turned 40 a few years ago, I took a solitude retreat and just started praying through who am I and what does God seem to use me to do and how do I maximize who I am? I always wanted to be Tim Keller, you know, wanted to preach amazing sermons, or mm-hmm. I wanted to be John Piper or David Platt and be passionate about the Lord, or I wanted to do things like what you're doing, have a PhD and teach in the academy. What I realized is who I really am. One of the things God's given me that just I have a kind of this freakish ability in is institutional leadership, starting institution. I just realized, hey, what God's done with Coram Deo is, you know, I've planted a church, and that's not unique by any means, but the way I lead tends to be kinds of leadership, structured and systems and processes, and how do we build a thing that will sustain itself? And
sure.
I realized at that season, hey, that's kind of my calling card. That's one of the things God's given me to do in life. And so I just started asking, hey, how should I leverage that in my city in particular? One of the needs where I live was just greater opportunities for Christian education. And my wife and I had homeschooled our older kids and had really bought into the classical model of education and felt like it was really full and rich for our kids. And so the short way of telling the story is I was in Austin, Texas, visiting my friend Will. I go down there once or twice a year. It's where we had our first children and used to live there for a while and have a lot of friends there and do some ministry there. And so I was in Austin. I experienced a school that was similar to the one we started. His son was going there at the time, and we went to pick up his son from school. And I was like, hey, this is a really interesting model. I've never seen anything like this. And what was interesting about it was a classical school. It was Christian. And it was collaborative, or like some people call it a university model school, where there's 2 to 3 days that the kids are in class on campus, and then the other 2 days they're doing work at home under the tutelage of their parents. But it's different than homeschooling in the sense that it's the school that's doing all the lesson planning and the curriculum. And so, you know, it's like a university where you go to class a couple days a week and you do your work on the side. And so I felt like, man, this is the thing that in Omaha, Nebraska, I think there's an opportunity for. This kind of school fills a niche and fills a need that I see in my community. And so I texted a friend of mine and said, calling him a friend, at that time he was really just an acquaintance. And I said, hey, have you ever thought about starting a school? And he said, let's sit down and talk about it when you get back. So the two of us sat down, and a third friend of ours got involved very early on, and sort of the three of us together formed the initial board of directors and kind of got this thing off the ground and got it rolling. So that's the short version is just, I saw it. I was like, hey, we should do this in Omaha, and gathered some people, and God graced that, in the way that he does. And that thing came to fruition. And along the way, man, all kinds of other people have, you know, it takes a lot of people to pull something like that and a lot of horsepower. And so we have, amazing leaders and an amazing head of school and amazing families. And so I don't take credit for any of that, but it was fun to be part of the initial push to get it started.
Yeah. Wow. That's inspiring. It strikes me that if you weren't in the ministry world, it sounds to me like you might be one of these types who's a serial entrepreneur.
Yeah, I kind of have that vibe. Yeah. I like to start things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really enjoy that. Okay, so when is that first conversation? What year?
That was the summer of 2015.
Okay.
Or actually, I guess May of 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And so I came back, my friend Phil and I sat down, said, hey, what would it take to get this going? And he's a little bit of a serial entrepreneur as well. Mm-hmm. He's an attorney who just he likes to start stuff and has the sort of legal mojo to mm-hmm. file paperwork. He knows how to check all the boxes with the state and the federal government and do all those things.
It's huge.
And so and then our friend Anna, who jumped on board with us, and we just said, hey, let's give the fall to seeing if this thing has legs. And so let's just put the word out that we're thinking about the idea and let's see what materializes. And so we sort of set ourselves a little bit of a strategic plan for about 6 months and just said, hey, if we give 6 months to this and it doesn't have any traction and the Lord's not doing it, then no big deal. We'll just, it'll be fun to try it and see what happens. Mm-hmm. And what happened was by the end of that fall, we had kind of a core nucleus of families who had raised their hand and said, if you start this school, we're in. We asked them to, I think, put $100 on the table to say like, and it's more than just my word. Here's a little bit of money that says I'm serious. And so we, as the year turned the corner then into January of 2016, we knew we had kind of the critical mass and the proof of concept, if you will, to get the thing started. And so the spring of 2016 was when we really sort of, hit the ground running. And then the school started in the fall of 2016. So it was about a 12-month process from the initial idea to actually when we were able to start classes.
That is moving. I mean, that is impressive.
It was, there was a lot of just the Lord's providential goodness behind it. Mm-hmm. People who were interested, a church that was willing to let us use their facility as a starting place. And so there's a lot of things that came together that really seemed to indicate, hey, God's kind of in this. And this is coming together in ways that are fun.
And fast forward now, obviously, it's been an interesting season with the virus, the pandemic, so that changes things. But let's talk about the school a little bit prior to that.
Yeah.
What does it look like today in 2020? How many families? How many students? How's it going? What have you learned? Those sorts of things.
It's been fantastic in terms of just organizational growth. So at the end of this spring, so the school year that sort of we just came out of, 266 students in grades K through 7, or actually pre-K through 7th grade, 142 families, 47 local churches represented. So, it's had consistent growth every single year over year. We, in fact, our biggest pain point is we can't grow the school fast enough just because of facility challenges, staffing challenges. There's just certain constraints that we have. I feel like if we didn't have any material constraints, it probably could grow even faster and even bigger. Our goal is not fast and big, but we are satisfied with how families in our city seem to have responded and how people have been really excited about this particular model of education. And I always say it's important for me to say as a pastor that that this is a sort of second level conviction for me. So, I lead a church of people who, some of them homeschool, some of them send their kids to public school, some of them send their kids to a collaborative school like what we have. I'm great with all of that. I want people, I feel like that's a place of Christian freedom. And so this is something that's sort of a side gig for me. I try to keep this world somewhat separate from my world as a pastor because I don't want to be complicated. I want to be able to look across the table at a father or mother in my church who's wrestling through an educational decision of, hey, what should we do with our child? And not have them imagining my automatic answer is you should send them to TCA because I don't think that's necessarily the case. But for sort of the second level convictions that I personally have and that my wife has about how we want to do education with our kids. And it's been really fun to see people sort of embrace this opportunity and say, hey, this is great. And we want to send our kids here and get behind this model.
Yeah, I would be very close to where you are, probably the same position, basically, as you just articulated it. I don't think there is one educational option we have to do as believers. I think homeschool can be great, can be terrific. I think Christian school can be great. Classical schools are fantastic, I think, in a lot of ways. I was a public school kid.
Yeah, me as well.
K to 12.
Yeah.
And, I managed to walk and chew gum at the same time.
Yeah.
And pray sometimes, you know. So
Well, okay, and there. And Nebraska is a non-charter school state. And so that, you know, I realize states are different there, but so our options in terms of that side of things are even more limited. And so, you know, there's some states where there are classical school options that are sort of like charter schools and you mm-hmm. tax dollars fund them and all of that. And, you know, that's an interesting debate to me, but yes. for where we live specifically, that was one of the challenges was just, there's not a broad range of, either classical options or non-traditional types of school. There's not a lot of innovation in that area. And so it was fun to be able to innovate something.
So the broader question, the deeper question, I guess you could say is, Why this option? You've just articulated clearly you don't think this is what every Christian family has to do, Christian school, classical school, however you want to frame it. But you did it. You undertook to create from thin air a classical academy.
Yeah.
My mind is ringing as you're talking here about like Rod Dreher, the Benedict option, all these kind of course, Christian schools were proliferating for decades before that.
Yeah.
But you have launched this in a particular season of, let's say, America's civilizational life when I would say a lot of Christians are thinking hard
yeah.
about this sort of deal. And even we may be kind of late in the game. Like, in other words, if you're seeing the need for options for your kids, your Christian father and mother, you want them to be trained in a sound way, not in a pagan or secular way. You may be thinking about this, but the clock is ticking.
Right.
So why you? What drove you to this particular vision and conviction?
There was a more of a spiritual concern and more of a pragmatic concern. Spiritually speaking, or sort of if I think about theological conviction, there was just a sense that I did want our city to have an option for Christian parents who were concerned about some of the broader cultural factors. I am not a defensive minded person. I don't just want to play defense. And I realized when we were in the homeschool community, a lot of people's reasons for homeschooling, and I don't think this is good or bad, but we're sort of like, I don't want my kids in that environment over there.
Yes.
I feel like I get that concern. It makes sense to me. I'm more of an offense-minded person of, hey, what are we building for the sake of the future? What kinds of human beings do we want to be creating? And as I thought about that question, my concern with the schools in my city was less about, hey, they're secular, they're not going to teach from a Christian worldview. I do think that's a problem at the end of the day, but yeah. It had more to do with I don't know that any school that's a public school has the freedom to establish character. I don't even think that's necessarily the conversation in education right now. The conversation is much more about achievement. It's about test scores. It's about, and those things matter. I'm not saying they don't matter, but we have a lot of public school teachers in our church, and their frustration is always, hey, I'm kind of working, swimming upstream. You know, there's things I care about for these kids that my system doesn't care about, because at the end of the day, my job is just to help them pass the test. I don't have the freedom, except in certain unusual environments. And there are some schools where you just have a principal who's very generous and there's a little bit of freedom there. But so my concern was more about what kind of people are we shaping for the future? And my conviction or my vision about classical education for my own kids was, man, I want them to have a Christian worldview, but more importantly, I want them to have the capacity to reason and think and evaluate arguments and be persuasive and wise. And I want them to be formed in certain ways. And that seems to require more than just a good curriculum. Mm-hmm. It seems to require a certain kind of culture. Mm. And that was a reason that I felt like, hey, I want to help to build a school that can freely shape its own culture without being constrained by certain, here's what we can't do, here's what we can't say, here's what we can't talk about. And so, you know, I think for a lot of folks who value Christian education, they can resonate with that concern. The pragmatic conviction just had more to do with the collaborative piece of, I saw a lot of people who, the reason they would choose not, they would not send their kids preferably to the school down the street, nor would they homeschool. One was sort of like, I have some concerns with that particular vision of school, but the other was, I don't feel competent to take on the full burden of my kids' education. So yeah. I just knew there's this swath of people out there who want a Christian education for their kids, and are not going to choose to homeschool. Because to homeschool, you just, I mean, my wife did that for over a decade, and it just takes a lot of administrative chops. You're planning lessons and buying curriculum and running a school, you know, and there's just people who feel overwhelmed by that. And so the pragmatic concern for me was, how can we create something that actually helps people, comes alongside those parents and says, hey, let us do the lesson planning, build the curriculum, shape the whole educational vision. All you get to do then is come alongside and do the fun stuff, which is teach with your kids, learn with your kids, help them execute their lesson plans and grow in virtue and character. That's what most parents really want to do. They're a little less excited sometimes about the administrative side of that.
Yeah. Wow. I'm interested because I find that such a infectious vision of education and the formation of children more broadly. You're not first talking about getting your kids into a college or a university.
Right.
You're not first talking about extracurriculars and sports or drama or whatever. You didn't even first say, you know, sort of zap them and make them Christians by age five, right?
Right.
If we could do that, we would, but that's not usually how it works. You talked about forming kids to love virtue and love the truth and know how to think, all in a Christian, deeply Christian framework, I hear you saying. I just don't think that's always the way that evangelicals or Baptists or whoever we're talking about, or the Baptist seminary, think about education.
Yeah, sadly, I think that's true.
I think we tend to be kind of spiritual pragmatists, if you will.
Yes.
And we can be pragmatic in a certain way, like you talked about. I'm on board with that. But we can be kind of like, so long as my kid comes to faith in whatever system we're talking about, that's it. That's it. That's all we have to say.
Yes.
Where did you not get that framework? It's a very clumsy podcast question, but seriously, why do you have a broader vision of forming your kids in this richer way?
This is probably coming out of some of my own convictions about discipleship in general.
Mm-hmm.
One of the weaknesses, if we can just be honest, in the evangelical church is a very functional vision of discipleship that says, be a Christian, love Jesus, you know, be faithful to your family, you know, live a good moral existence. And that's kind of, it's very thin.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been shaped enough by thinkers like Dallas Willard, by thinkers like James K. Smith, even by some of what Rod Dreher has been raising, just to say, hey, the issue we have in the church has less to do with a misunderstanding of salvation and more to do with just an inappropriate vision of formation, that actually the things that we are habituated into, the things that become second nature, the things that just over time our souls and bodies, they just sort of get woven in there in deep ways. That happens in the family. It also happens in the school, and it also happens in anything we do repeatedly over time. You know, you're a sports guy. I'm a sports guy. My two sons are baseball players, and I've spent their entire childhood trying to form muscle memory in them as pitchers and as hitters, so that when they get up to the plate, they're not thinking about what do I do with my hands? What do I do with my feet? What do I do with my batting stance? It just feels natural. Mm-hmm. Anyone who has learned an instrument or learned to dance or played a sport understands that. Christians, I think, have done a poor, or maybe we've been late to the conversation there, or we just haven't inhabited our own tradition. Because I think the church fathers talked about, the reformers talked about that. That's not new, but in America, we've sort of become very functional in our vision of discipleship. And so for me, as I thought about my own kids again, I thought, hey, do I want them to know Jesus? Absolutely. Do I want them to have convictions about gospel doctrine? Yes. But I also want them to be a certain kind of people. And the kids that I am responsible for as a president of a school board, man, I want us to do more than just pass on Christian doctrine. I also want us to shape a certain kind of person. We have like a portrait of a graduate, we call it, of just like, hey, when someone graduates from our school, what kind of person do we want them to be? And there's a certain thing we have in mind there that's thicker than just someone who has a Christian worldview. That's important. But we don't want just that. We want someone who's learned to reason. We want someone who's had to work through conflict. We want someone who has learned to love people who think differently from them, rather than seeing them as enemies or combatants, seeing them as fellow human beings who are worth reasoning with and can be charitable in disagreement. These are the kinds of things that we feel like this, if we can form these things at age 12, that sure makes that person at age 25, hopefully a way better student, a way better member of your church, a way better future leader in the church. You know, mm-hmm. that's part of the vision that we have.
Yeah. And being a father and mother is no easy task. So you get why we can be prey to a kind of spiritual pragmatism where we would think, okay, it's hard enough just to like make the toast on time, you know, in the morning and do these basic things. I'm trying to get my kid into the kingdom of Christ. You know, if we get there, we're doing well, but we really do want not just a richer understanding of childhood training, but of discipleship more broadly. I agree completely. Sadly, though, sometimes those of us on the more conservative wing, wherever we fall, can be known for having right doctrine, and you alluded to this, but not being that much interested in curiosity, in the arts, in literature, you know, choose what you want to talk about. I would be one who would see no tension between the truth and curiosity. So I don't want my kids or the students I train here at Midwestern Seminary, Spurgeon College, I don't want them to think that they used to have curiosity when they weren't really clear on Christianity. And then they come to a school and then they get all the principles they need to know. And that's it. They don't have to think.
Right.
Actually, there's no tension between knowing the truth and then living a curious, engaged, intellectual life. The truth funds and drives curiosity. So there's not a tension between it. But sadly, there often can be, I think.
Well, and like you said, I think that's like we need to play defense and offense mm-hmm. as parents, right? So there is a world who wants to disciple my kids. Mm. And playing defense is making sure they understand the doctrine of the scriptures and have a basic Christian worldview that inculcates them against some of the false ideas that are out there. But I think that playing offense is also equipping them to be curious learners in the world. Mm-hmm. And the best of the Christian tradition, I think you would agree, are people who are deeply convinced and convicted, but also winsome and charitable and not afraid of an idea out there that's unorthodox. Because at the end of the day, truth wins if it's on the field.
Yes. Yes. That's well said. So what would you say to a pastor listening to this humble little podcast who is feeling what you and I are feeling? Let's say he's in a large town, a small city, I don't know, somewhere, and there's not maybe like an amazing educational option for his kids. He's long-term. He wants to plant roots. He doesn't want to do the transient pastor thing, you know, moving every 3 years if he can help it. So he wants to serve an actual community in a Wendell Berry-esque kind of way. Okay. Would you say to that guy who's got plenty on his plate with a church like you, think about this, do this, you must do this, never do this? Where does your advice fall? And let me just say this quickly. I think that this is vital to think through. We often as Christians can think, well, if we just set up a local church, that's kind of it. But I think there's something here that you're onto. Mm. Not everybody's going to do this, but yeah. So what is your word to the pastor?
I would probably broaden it beyond the pastor. So I think if you're a pastor, I would say you should not necessarily do this.
Yeah.
I don't think, in fact, I have a friend in Austin, Texas, who serves on a school board of a school like mine. He said, hey, I only know two pastors in the United States of America that have done this, you and Doug Wilson. I don't know anyone else who's trying to be a pastor and lead a classical school. That's chaos. So I think that's probably true. What I would suggest, though, is as pastors, for people who are leading in the church, what we want to do is two things. We want to, number one, like I think about my role as a pastor is going back to, if I believe, and I personally do, that education can be a secondary conviction and that there are different options parents can choose there, I want to equip parents to be very involved in their kids' education, to not see it as, well, I'm going to hand my kids off to the school and they're going to do the job. Right. Whether it's a Christian school or any other kind of school, that's a parent's role is deeply involved in their kids' education, and they need to be. So I want pastors to help parents have that vision, because I think one of the places where we can be passive as Christian parents is just to sort of assume, well, hey, that's why I send my kids to school, so they can get educated.
Right.
And only the homeschool people are responsible to doing the education. But secondly, I would say to a pastor who has a sort of, like you said, a long-term Wendell Berry-esque, be in a place for a long time kind of vision, mm-hmm. I would want to say what is the Spirit of God stirring up, or what might the Spirit of God stir up among a concerned group of Christians? You know, how can you sort of just be a catalyst maybe for something? Mm-hmm. Because what I found is I had to be the catalyst, but as soon as I was willing to say, hey, can we get some traction behind this idea? There were immediately four people in my life who were like, hey, in fact, here's our head of school that runs TCA, who we hired at the very beginning. And she had been a high school English teacher for 8 years in a public high school in our city. And so had a teaching background. When I first said, hey, I'm thinking about starting a school like this, she came to me and said, hey, I have been praying about a school exactly like that for a year, and I didn't know anyone else was thinking about it. And so I just said, well, that's not an accident.
Wow.
And so I just want to encourage pastors and leaders, hey, even if you're not wired with sort of that entrepreneurial, you should get it started kind of thing, it is quite possible that the Lord is provoking people in your city, in your church or in other churches, who have some energy around things like this and could be a part of starting this. The other thing that people should know is, particularly for these kinds of schools, classical Christian collaborative schools, there are a couple of different consortiums of people who provide sort of like coaching and support to people who want to start a school like this. And so it's quite easy if the energy is there to say, hey, let's do this, but we need help with the how. There's a lot of ways to go find help with the how. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people who are like, hey, if you have the right group of people who want to see something like this start, we'll help you get from, you know, A to Z mm-hmm. on rolling the plan forward. So it does not take, you know, the kind of entrepreneurial energy that has to envision something, start it from scratch, build all the systems, and get the whole thing going.
When I was in Louisville, Kentucky a few years back teaching at Southern Seminary, I became acquainted with a school called Highlands Latin Classical Academy. I think I have the title right there. And so they were doing classical education from a Christian-influenced kind of form. And, you know, so now I'm getting used to first and second graders starting to learn Latin. And I don't think every school would have to do precisely this school's curriculum, but it was just remarkable. And I, at the time, was doing a little bit of writing for the American Spectator and wrote a piece where I said, why classical schools might just save Western civilization. That was the level of confidence that I banked in an enterprise like that. So these efforts, to come behind what you're saying, these efforts can feel really humble and small, and in a lot of places they probably will be. You seem to me like you had a fair bit of convening power in your city, in Omaha, established church, well-known, strong reputation, these sorts of things. Not every pastor or person listening to this, people who are not pastors, as you said a minute ago, is going to have that kind of convening power. But there is real strength, even in small efforts, and things can really build, as you've talked about. So this is a very inspiring story, I think, to me and to others.
Well, thank you. I think it's the best kind of localism, right? It's the kind of what makes these kinds of things work are people in a place who care about that place and the kids and the families in that place.
Yes.
And so the uniqueness is you have, I think, a lot of synergy at the level of the philosophy of education. But what's going to make it work is you and people in your neighborhood and city going, hey, let's do something like this here. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we're not going for national prominence, and we're not trying to get on the cover of magazines. We're just trying to be faithful in our place to help kids learn and to help provide some educational models that might not exist there.
So, Omaha is your city. You have, you're talking about localism. We are now. Just before we conclude, what has it been like for you to set up shop there and make that your home? We're out here in the Midwest. I'm in Kansas City. You're in Omaha. We both know that this is country, sometimes called flyover country, and these sorts of things. It's been really, really eye-opening to me to come and live in the Midwest and see all that God is doing out here and see all the promise and the natural beauty and all sorts of different things. What are you feeling in this season of your life, this stage of your life, about where you are? Is there a peace? Is there a contentment? Is there a happiness? What are you feeling?
Yeah, very much so. And part of what brought me back to Omaha was I had grown up there, moved there when I was 8 years old. So that was where I went to high school and kind of my formative years. And I was just convinced, you know what? Not everybody wants to move and live here. I'm from this place. I understand this place. I get the culture of this place. And I am one of those people who likes to be in a place long enough, or my vision for my life is to be in a place long enough to where I can just sort of have sustained influence. It's funny that you asked that question, because I feel like, well, I've kind of, with what God has done at Coram Deo and with what God has done at Trinity Classical Academy, I feel pretty satisfied. Like, what? I've done two things that were sort of on my bucket list of like, can I plant a church and can I start this school? And yeah, these both happened. And so yeah. I don't feel any sense of like, oh, I have dreams that are unfulfilled. But I think what the Lord is building in me is a sense of, yeah, these are the kinds of things I just sort of want to give my life to in a place and help other people have a vision for that place. Because I do think there's something in our hearts and something in our culture that's sort of like a running discontentment, where there's always a cooler place I could be. There's always a place with different kinds of culture, more mountains, more oceans. You know, there's lots of reasons why I would say, oh, gosh, Omaha is not on a whole lot of postcards, you know, as like the most beautiful place in North America. But yeah, for me, there's a real satisfaction in saying, I feel like God has given me favor to make a difference in a place and by his grace to continue doing that. And that feels very fulfilling to me. And I do think that's, you know, some of the writers and thinkers who are most provocative to me are people that sort of work against that discontentment or that restlessness in the soul and that say, hey, but there's beauty in being in a place for a long time.
Mm-hmm. That's well said. Well, this has been a very stimulating conversation for me. I trust it will be for others. And without wanting to go on record as saying, this is the way to do things, because
correct.
You're not saying that. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
I do want to just close on my end by saying, I do think, however, that this is something to think through in a serious way for Christians in this day and age. Public schools are, in many places at least, in rougher and rougher places. It's getting harder and harder to be a Christian in such environments. It's not impossible in a lot of places, but it's challenging. We don't want to run from the challenge, but we also want to recognize we have this discipleship responsibility. Years ago, I heard Al Mohler say that something like 97% of all adult Christians were raised in a Christian home, which in a way is kind of discouraging, because you realize it's not as common as we would hope for people to come into the kingdom who don't have some kind of background in being trained into it. On the other hand, it's actually quite encouraging, because it tells you there's real power in familial formation and the witness of the local church, and then through institutions like schools and these sorts of things. I'll say it this way in concluding. We can be so local church driven that we can lose sight of the power of other institutions. I don't think we're forced to make a choice. I think we can be greedy here. We can be local church loving Christians who also love institutions like Christian schools, classical schools, Christian colleges, seminaries, these sorts of things.
Yes.
So any thoughts there as we wrap up?
No, I think you're exactly right. I think there's a growing chorus of people who are helping us recognize that and say, hey, actually, as Christians, we have a responsibility to think about the common good. Mm-hmm. And these are parts of our responsibility that, yes, we should love and care about the local church, but also we should care about things like education, things like serving the poor, right? And these take mm-hmm. other institutions besides the church. They're not the church's job, mm-hmm. but they are the purview of Christians. Christians
right.
need to care about building a thriving city, and you know, it's this podcast, right? It's the city of God
right.
within the city of man, and these are Amen. These are ways that we can be involved in that.
Well said. Thank you so much, Bob. Thanks for being on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, friends, we always say the goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. In this case, this podcast has a little wider scope. Our goal here is to equip those who might be thinking about topics of education or about starting a school in their city. So for those of you who are Christians or church leaders in other contexts, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that this might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. We always love to hear from listeners, so if there's a question that this episode raised for you, or if you've got a topic suggestion, reach out to us, podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.